Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I'm Ami Kassar, your host, along with my co-host, Lynn Ozer, aka SBA Queen. Happy to have our guest on today, Kira Wisman of KWC CPAs. Based near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, sort of on the other side of the state of us, but feeling close anyway. Kira's here to talk to us all about stuff, accounting, life, bookkeeping, financial controls, all the stuff I know are those favorite topics of entrepreneurs. Kira, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Awesome. Kira, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
As you mentioned, I am a controller slash CFO in the advisory practice at KWC CPAs. I'm here coming up on a year now. I was actually plucked out of the corporate accounting world last year and couldn't be happier to have joined this great group of people. So I get to help more than one company improve their processes and their financial reporting now instead of just being with one.
Were you a client of KW?
Totally. The KWC is actually based out of Alexandria, Virginia, and a recruiter reached out to me, and I wasn't really looking for another job at the time. And, I talked to the team, and they were some of the most engaging people I've spoken with, extremely passionate, shared a lot of my feelings about things. So, I kind of hopped on board.
That's terrific. Where did you start your career? Did you always intend to be an accountant, or?
How far back do we want to go?
College.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a horse trainer. And then in high school, I took an accounting class and came home from school one day and said, I think I want to be an accountant. And my parents were extremely relieved
that I would not be
on their payroll for the rest of my life. So that's kind of when I decided I wanted to be an accountant. I didn't know. I come from a long line of accountants on my dad's side, the whole family. Accountants, some of them, partners with what was Bain LaFrance, eventually became KPMG and Ernst & Young. So my dad was a CFO of an oil and gas company. I actually grew up in West Virginia, and he ultimately was a CFO of one up here. So I kind of came from a long financial background that as a kid, I didn't really pay any attention to that. So accounting's kind of in my blood. And I went to college at WVU, West Virginia University, got my accounting degree, went into public here in Pittsburgh for a few years. Then I was kind of funneled into tax because the firm I was working with was a tax-heavy firm. And I had an opportunity after a few years there to move overseas to Costa Rica and help start an online gambling organization back when that was not as government-friendly as it is now here in the United States. So
Sounds exciting.
It was super exciting. Whole lot to learn about the world, that is for sure. I was 24 years old. So
what a neat experience that must have been.
It really was. You learn a lot about business, a lot about international business, a lot about yourself. You have to learn to speak Spanish real quick.
I was going
to
say, you must speak Spanish.
I do. I speak a decent amount of Spanish. And I was down there for about 3 years. So the regulatory environment started to get real tight. Our government was really cracking down and, just didn't seem like the right place to be. So I came home, came back to public in Pittsburgh for a few years, ultimately left and joined corporate where I was for the next 11 years until I've joined KWC. So kind of have experience in a little bit of everything. And along those lines, when I hit corporate, I really became passionate. The owner of the company I worked for initially was very passionate about people and really taught me the importance of motivation, how to get the best out of people. Accounting tends to be very nitpicky in pointing out the wrongs. And so I'm trying to flip that switch and point out what people do right more than the wrong. And so we kind of lose that stigma that has become attached to our profession. No one's going into accounting anymore.
All right. Let's go now and talk a little bit more specifically about the work you do these days. What do you do? What's your favorite type of work that you do these days?
The team, departmental organization. and team member motivation is my absolute favorite part. It's not what I do the most of right now. I do have 8 clients that I service on a monthly basis. I act as the controller. I have staff underneath me. So, you know, I do everything from assisting the team with transaction coding and month-end close processes, booking accrual entries, reviewing financial statements, pulling together ad hoc reports for clients when they need that, you know, whether that be a cash burn analysis, a full set of management reports, you know, customized to what our clients need, meeting with our clients and helping them with budgeting and forecasting. So, you know, I would say no day is ever really the same around here. And I've also volunteered, obviously, to help the marketing arm of the firm kind of get the word out there about what we do and how we can help other people.
Very interesting. And
tell me what type of clients, size clients you're usually working with, Kira.
You know, our firm really tries to target the small or mid-market range, but we do have some very large clients with over $100 million in revenue that have multiple locations across the country. And then, you know, my smallest client is a great bunch of people, family-run business. It's a tech business, and they are a few $100,000 in revenue a year. And they are some of the people who need the most help, actually, you know, at the end of the day.
So is your firm industry agnostic? You deal with all types of industries, I assume, or do you have some specialization?
You know, it's been a hot topic around here in the past several months. I think we tried to be industry agnostic for a while, and we figured out that isn't really going to serve our wheelhouse moving forward. You know, we now are really geared towards professional services firms, mm-hmm. technology firms, startup organizations, companies that, you know, we're trying to stay out of inventory intensive businesses, the restaurant industry, those sorts of industries aren't serviced as well by what we do as an outsourced advisory, you know, accounting department. And, you know, we have a bottom line to think about as well. So when you start getting into those super granular companies with inventory analysis needs and whatnot, unless it's small, it's not something we'd be looking to do.
All right, Kira, I got a tough question for you. You ready?
I'm ready.
How does an entrepreneur know the business, $2 million of revenue, say when you grow from $500,000 to $10 million along that way, your needs change a lot and your complexities change a lot. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in our work, we find entrepreneurs or business owners whose accounting systems and processes haven't kept up, maybe because of loyalty to the people that were there or helped them at the beginning, or they've really outgrown their CPA firm. And on the other side, sometimes we find people that we think are spending way too much money and putting too much in relative to their size. How do you know? Is there a health check that says to a business owner, an entrepreneur, you're doing well, like this is appropriate, your appropriate checks and balances and level of staff and support for where you are? It's really a tough thing. And I don't know. I wish there was a tool that you could come in and give a clean and objective evaluation to an entrepreneur.
You know, well, it's not really not a one size fits all answer to that, because every business is different and everybody's goals are different within that business. But, you know, I can say that it is extremely important to reach out to a professional before you think you should reach out to a professional. You know, if you've started a business from, you know, the ground up, and you're not a financially oriented person, you're worried about running your business for your passion and your goals. So, you know, often we're starting out with Excel spreadsheets. We're not investing in actual accounting personnel. They're a little bit more expensive than administrative personnel. So you might have somebody doing the books who isn't really qualified to do the books. So, you know, the moment you start seeing yourself unable to get any type of accurate monthly reporting, or maybe you're not even able to get your bank statements reconciled, it's time to start asking somebody for some help. And, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive right out of the gate. I think that's something that people are so afraid of is that I don't want to put, you know, money into my financial processes. You know, one of the people I worked for once said, you know what, you accountants, you do nothing but cost me money. You're not out there selling this product. you know, you are nothing but, you know, a drain on our resources. And that was such a terrible way to look at things. You need to reach out to a professional. You know, you can often get advice for free. You can often get advice at a very low cost. You can get somebody to come in and take a look at what you're doing. Third set of eyes, a completely neutral set of eyes is key. You are going to see things how you want to see them. And you can get some advice to go in the right direction quickly. It is always important to have a balance sheet, an income statement, and a cash flow statement every month. If you can't get there, at least every quarter, and that you're able to talk through those with somebody that could kind of tell you what to do, because that's the health checkup on your business.
We find that understanding the cash flow of your business is really, you know, tantamount to doing well and being able to move forward and determining, you know, whether you need an operating line of credit versus a term loan. These are things that a lot of entrepreneurs really just don't know. I mean, I think they realize that they're buying a piece of equipment and they want a term loan. But aside from that, for growth capital, they can't wrap their head around what it is that they need to do and whether it's long-term expansion or whether they're just financing their cash cycle. So how do you hone in on that?
Well, you know, the best way to do that is to take a look at where your spending is, what you're bringing in, where the dollars are going. If you do need, you know, it never hurts to have a business line of credit. I think it's underused. I think people are afraid of debt.
Yeah,
they're very afraid of debt. Term loan is something super easy to understand. It's very much like your mortgage payment or your car payment. You know, I need to buy $100,000. Here we go. I'm going to pay $1,500 a month for the next 10 years. And I don't even really care what the interest rate is because my brain doesn't operate that way. And, you know, a line of credit is something that you should be a peace of mind tool. And so, you know, you obviously aren't going to have the credit history, depending on where you are, if you're starting completely from scratch to maybe to go down that route. But, you know, you get 6 months, 9 months into your business, you should be able to have my payroll is $10,000 a month and my utilities are $2,000 a month. And you kind of need to know where that is. And oh, geez, you know what? Every 6 weeks, I mean, I'm running into a little bit of a cash crunch because people aren't paying me timely or I'm not billing them timely, which can also be the case. So it helped to have that peace of mind to be able to have a line of credit to draw from in times of, so you're not stressed about that. You're running your business. So knowing when, again, goes down to knowing. You don't need to know when you need to get the loan. You need to know when to ask somebody who can help tell you that, hey, you know what? We've been doing this for a while. Let's get some of these safeguards in place, get a line of credit in place, get a plan, you know, for, we know what we've been doing for a little while. Maybe we do need to invest in some equipment, whether it be equipment for manufacturing to do whatever we're doing, or whether that be equipment for technology and office equipment. You know, you need to have that plan in place. And it all goes down to, what have I been spending? What do I want to spend? What do I want? Everybody wants to spend more. And what can I spend?
It's interesting that I had two conversations, one Sunday and one this morning, with two different entrepreneurs facing a growth challenge and one facing a shrinking challenge. Okay. So one in the consumer goods business who's like scaling up and eating cash. And the other in the logistics business has had a horrific year and is really nervous about next year. And for both of them, it was the discussion about equity or debt. And for both of them, it was slow down. Neither of them could give me an answer about what their cash needs were next year.
Which means they don't know where they were.
Yeah, neither of them have a strong opinion about how much money they need to reach their objectives next year. And until they do that, you can't have an intelligent conversation with them about debt or equity.
No.
And one of the biggest challenges that I find out there in our work, and it's the same is true for us to some extent, entrepreneurs don't really understand their business models and really understand their forecasts and their projections very well.
No.
And entrepreneurs don't really understand the implications of different decisions. If I do this, that will happen, or that will happen. And that general framework is so important and, in my opinion, so dearly missing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, and I think a lot of times, even when you do go and find an outside firm, somebody that you're asking questions to. Everybody gets into tech speak, and we're using language that maybe everybody in the accounting profession or the finance profession understands quite well, but it isn't translating to a small business owner who just wants to understand. When you say, what do you need to buy next year? What do you want to buy? You're scaling up. How many people do you want to hire? They don't know even how to answer that question. And say, you would say, well, okay, we have 15 people. Each person's costing us an average of X dollars. We need to now say, if you want to grow, we've been growing at X rate for the past few months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever it might be. We want to continue that. We need X number of employees to keep scaling at that rate. Or if we want to increase that, we need more X number of employees. You know, so it's learning how to talk. You have to talk real language to people when you're asking these questions to get the information out of them. And we then need to be able to take that narrative that we were provided from them and turn that into that forecast of, well, this is based on what you have said in our just a conversation. You need somebody that can then say, these are the assumptions I have made. And right. We can change these assumptions six ways to Sundays and as often as you want. We can change And then they again, it's learning how to communicate with a business owner that doesn't speak finance, and they don't often want to admit they don't speak finance because people feel, you know, less respected if they don't pretend to know. You know, knowing whether to use debt or equity is certainly not even always what you want. It's whether if you're downsizing, you're going to have a hard time. You know, the logistics company has had a poor year, you're going to have trouble convincing people to come in and give you investment money. You know, you're going to have a more compelling story to get equity out of somebody than you are to get debt, except, you know, unless you're growing like the other company in that example.
It's a big issue, I think, for businesses, say, between $1 and $15 million.
Mm-hmm. It is. You know, we fight the battle every day. And, you know, people are generally good about putting together a budget. They will just look at last year. We'll say we spent X number of dollars on our internet, and you know, and we can say we don't expect that to go up. You can create an easy budget, which is just a point in time. There's that saying that the day you do a budget, the next day your budget is done. You're kind of already useless. So that forecasting and making those assumptions and revisiting them regularly is key. If you don't revisit them, what you assumed was going to happen in 2024 in December, and you're in March, and all of a sudden your business has tripled, you know, you went viral, maybe, that you can't say, well, this is what the budget said. And so now you have to sit down and you have to ask those questions again. It's a continual assessment that you should have with yourself, or especially with an advisor, a trusted advisor, whether that be an internal person or an external organization.
Good advice.
But at different points along the growth curve, your needs change. That's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make.
Yes.
Look, a number of years, you're just street fighting. You don't even time to think about it. It's about how to survive next week.
Yeah, you are. But, you know, even in a street fight, you got to have the back of that brain moving.
You got to have the back of the brain
moving. Yeah, you've got to. You can't just have those blinders on. You know, there's always going to be a time when you start a business where that's what you're doing. We're just trying to survive. And that's why I said sooner than you think. Maybe a little light bulb goes off in your head, and I'm going to go out and get some informal advice. Here's what I'm doing, and it seems to be going well. Am I hitting all the markers that I need to hit to continue to be this successful? And it gets more and more important as the longer you go. You know, if you start to go from 500,000 to 1 million to 2 million to 5 million to 10 million, and you're going really quick, all of a sudden you've got different reporting requirements no matter what industry you're in. You've got internal control issues. Theoretically, your staff should be growing to keep up with that. So you're going to have employment issues to keep up with. You really need to ask, either staff it yourself or ask a professional advisory firm and be real with that. You know, don't come in and give the glossy marketing story about your company. You know, real talk. You know, your advisor needs to know everything, kind of like your attorney.
It's a little bit what I would say to entrepreneurs. If you don't have a real good, solid sense, if you don't feel like you've got a real handle on how your machine is running and how the numbers are running and the sense are running, take a step back and get some help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, how do you think maybe Jeff Bezos knew when it was time to leave his garage? You know, there was a point at which when the maybe he was stacking boxes of books in the driveway or in his, you know, in his parents' house all of a sudden. Now, you know what? I might need a warehouse. That same sort of astuteness needs to apply to your money, because without your money and your financial processes being handled properly, you're not going to be worried about your inventory or your office space.
And then even if you're dealing with someone who is astute, something like COVID comes along and there you are, you know, being forced to pivot whether you want to or not. And I think at that time, people were happier or more readily were looking for help. But what did you experience working with entrepreneurs who had that thrown at them from out of the clear blue sky?
I'll tell you, I was still in industry at that point.
Okay.
Not only that, but our company had just been sold from a family business to a private equity company 6 weeks before the shutdown. So we were already in an enormous amount of transition. It had been family-owned business, and all of a sudden there was nobody with really any knowledge. This was completely uncharted territory. So that the second you should ask anybody and everybody, your peers, your competitors, you know, there comes a point at which you're in something like that, you're all in it together. And not to mention even our government, you know, they're throwing out PPP loans and the requirements to apply for these loans is changing practically daily.
Hourly.
Yeah, it was insane. You know, we were, I think, one of the first companies that we probably got our PPP loan in. We had our funds by April. And I will tell you what, though, the documentation we submitted, it got much less as time went on, which is probably why the fraud went up. But, you know, we had to submit like 2 years of utility bills and mortgage interest statements. And you mean an enormous load of data to get that loan. But we pivoted. We didn't freeze. We didn't say, you know what, we need to wait and see what happens. Partially because the private equity company had a depth of knowledge behind them that said, oh, no, we're going all in right now. So if you're in something that is a life or death situation like that, and I have no doubt this will happen again, probably sooner than we think in just today's business climate and uncertainty with the economy and everything that is going on around the world, the second something like that happens is you've got to ask for help. I have had a lot of friends who have really small businesses, a small tanning salon in the area, you know, and they couldn't for the life of them figure out how to fill out that form. And they were embarrassed to ask for help. I mean, they didn't ask me for help until August. And they had been struggling with this form and they just didn't have the knowledge to do it. And they were embarrassed to ask for help. So don't ever be embarrassed to ask for help. It takes a lot more courage to ask for help. And, you know, put that ego aside than it does to not ask for that help. You know,
in all situations, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. The same thing with this ERTC credit that keeps going around. The IRS has kind of put the kibosh on it for a little while here, but it is, you've got to watch too, you know, and something seems too good to be true. Well, we just had a client that had to pay some of that money back. They were not our client at the time. And the IRS came around and said, and they had a very small client and they had to pay back, you know, $20,000+ and it hurts. They didn't really have the money to do that. So it goes both ways. That's where the professional advice, before you just go and you hire some firm you've never heard of that sent you an email and said, hey, free money.
Yeah.
You know, you need to ask the right people. So you get some references.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That was a scary time, I could tell you.
Tell us about KWC CPAs. Who are you? What do you do? How big? Where are you?
Well, we are headquartered in Alexandria, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. We have about 130 accountants, more during tax season when we take on some temporary workers. We are a full service public accounting firm, everything from business services groups to audits to tax to advisory in a number of different areas. And we do have a number of remote employees all over the country. You know, I'm in Pittsburgh and we have another person in Pennsylvania. We have some people in Ohio. We have some people in Maryland. So we are a very progressive firm as far as remote work is concerned. And we're very involved in the BDO Alliance, big national firm that has created an alliance of a lot of smaller firms around the country. So when we need some help, we have everybody and everything at our disposal. The firm has been around. This is our 40th anniversary. We'll be having a party in the spring. I love parties. So been around a long time. Our managing principal, Connie Hamill, is also one of the heads of our client accounting services department and is very passionate about growing this arm of our firm. And it is just an absolutely great place to work. A great bunch of really dedicated individuals. You know, this isn't a place that, you know, everybody's just looking to punch a clock at 5 o'clock because everybody really likes what they do. And, you know, it's just a wonderful bunch of people.
Are your clients generally local or do they come from anywhere and everywhere?
Oh, they come from anywhere and everywhere. We even have some clients in England.
Wow. So about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do come from anywhere and everywhere. We have some West Coast clients. We have one of my clients is headquartered in Florida, but they have places all over the country. So there really is no limit to where we will work with somebody with this wonderful new technology we have. Technology is being harnessed better, you know, allows us to talk to anybody and help anybody from just about anywhere.
That's great.
And if clients want to reach you or listeners want to reach you or learn more about your firm, where do they find you?
Well, they can find me on my LinkedIn page and Kira Wisman. They can reach out to me directly there. Can reach out to me at my firm email address at kira.wisman@kwccpas.com. And you can come to our website, kwccpa.com. And we have a beautiful website, brand new, just launched it, and have all of the areas of services that we offer, a description of that, and the information about our staff, all of managers and shareholders on there. And you can reach out through there as well if you would like to. And we're very happy to talk to anybody about anything. You know, you can, it is free to just reach out to us and ask for some basic advice. So, you know, we do a financial assessment, a financial health assessment, very low cost, a thing we can offer to come in and, you know, if you're not looking for a full service.
That's very interesting. It could be helpful to a lot of entrepreneurs.
Right, right. Yeah. You want us to come in, take a look at your systems, talk to some people, see where your strengths and weaknesses are. We are certainly able to do that for you as well.
Awesome.
That's terrific.
In a great conversation, Lynn. Do you have any questions that I'm not thinking about?
No, I thought that what you just said at the end is awesome. Based on everything that we've talked about over the last half hour and people who may be afraid to ask questions or are wanting to take the next steps or do that and getting to have a conversation before, you know, diving in and coming clean with what their needs are and you doing a brief assessment, I think that could be really helpful to a lot of the entrepreneurs that are listening in. And so thank you for explaining that and sharing that with us. I appreciate it.
Well, absolutely. It's just been a very fun chat. Thank you again for having me.
It was okay. Great.
Take care now. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on OmniSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.